All right, welcome back to our next apparently cycle of Zoom Shiurim, because we had started the first cycle right around Sfiras HaOmer. So this year, I'm going to begin from this angle. This is not a well-known fact, but did you know that according to the Gemara in... Gemara Shabbos, Daf Pei Zayin Amud Beis. The 50th day of Sfiras HaOmer does not work out to be the day that we celebrate Shavuos. Yetzias Mitzrayim, according to the Gemara there, was on a Thursday. We have a tradition.
Back.
We have a tradition that Matan Torah was on a Shabbos. So if you make the calculations, it turns out that the day before Matan Torah is Shavuos, because Matan Torah was on a Shabbos, which is day 51. So you trust that somebody thought this through. That's how it works out. It's a very strange thing. Let me just reiterate. According to the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Pei Zayin Amud Beis, because Yetzias Mitzrayim was on a Thursday, and we have a Mesorah, that Matan Torah, the day we got the Aseres HaDibros, was on a Shabbos, comes out that day 50 was actually the day before that we got the Torah. So that's an interesting thing, no? So what's going on? Also, there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Vav Amud Beis, that says that because of the fact that back in the old days, not like we have a fixed calendar today, but in the old days, it used to be that witnesses would show up to the Beis Din to declare the new moon. They would testify that what they saw was a sliver of the new moon, and then they would be brought to front of the Beis Din, and they would declare it. And it could be a range of days of when they were accepted. But because of this, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that Vav Amud Beis says, it was possible in different years that day 50 could turn out to be different calendar dates. Some years it would be Hey Sivan, some years Vav Sivan, and some years Zion Sivan. So it's very strange, right? Because there's no guarantee when Sivan is going to be. It all depends on when the witnesses come. So apparently the Torah doesn't really care that we're celebrating Shavuos on the exact calendar date of when the Torah was given, because it's built into the way it should be really lechatchila, that you have this range of possibilities of when Sivan would start. Well, you know that you're counting day 50 because of another cheshbon. That's a different pasuk in the Torah. You start counting from when you bring the Omer, and then it's 50 days. And that's a steady thing. That's on the second day of Pesach. So you're going to get your day 50 regardless, always starting from day 2 of Pesach. But when the calendar dates work out to be is dependent on when the witnesses have you starting the month of Sivan. Furthermore, had the Torah really wanted us to celebrate the exact calendar date of Matan Torah, if that was really a God's interest, then it would have said such a thing. The Torah would have declared which day of the month of Sivan we should be celebrating. But you won't find that anywhere. It talks about Chag HaShavuos, which we'll get to in another minute. Why is it called that? But it never says on this particular date. It just says when you get to this day of counting 50 days, then you have this holiday. So there's something fishy going on here. So what's going on? It's certainly not about, the capturing the very moment, even though I know everybody thinks it's the day we got the Torah. It's what everybody says. Shavuos is the day we got the Torah. But it's not, apparently, and it doesn't matter that it's not, because the Torah didn't care to identify that day. So let me share with you something about this, just a moment. So after all of these explanations, Rav Hashem Volosh writes in Vayikra, in Parshas Emor, you can find it on pages 802 and 803. He says as follows. Thus, after all the things I just explained to you, the day that is elevated to a festival is not the day of the revelation on Sinai. but the final day of the counting leading up to that great day. For the view that has been accepted by the nation is that Shavuos falls on the day before the law giving. And the Torah was not given on the 50th, but on the 51st day in that year. From this we learn a profound truth. The festival of Matan Torah does not relate to the fact of the giving of the Torah. Rather, it celebrates our making ourselves worthy of receiving the Torah. That's what we're celebrating. The process leading up to Matan Torah, that we finished and we, whatever's supposed to happen during this counting, that's what we're celebrating. The day before the law giving, the last day of Hagbalah and Prisha, that was the, Hagbalah was the cordoning off the mountain from us, and the Prisha was the separation between husband and wife. That's the culmination of all our preparations. That is the day represented by the 50th day of Sfiras HaOmer. It is the day on which the people were ready for their great mission to be receivers and bearers of the Torah. As we have noted elsewhere, the festival of Shavuos differs from all other festivals in that it is not named after the mitzvos that apply during the festivals. Like Korban Pesach, for instance, it's called Pesach because we have Korban Pesach, and it's the things around Hashem Pesach is Batei Avosein, Hashem skipped over. That's called Pesach. Sukkos, it's called Sukkos because we're in Sukkos, about the mitzvahs of the day. And Shavuos is not called anything about Torah. It's called the days leading up to this moment. Rather, it is called Shavuos, weeks, after the counting which preparatorily leads up to it. Isn't that something to think about? The holiday that we're celebrating is not about the day itself. It's about what happened to get here to this moment. So here we are in the middle of Sfira. We're 3 weeks into Sfiras HaOmer. It's a good time to pause and think about it. If that's what it's all about, then really appreciate that we're not necessarily counting to get the Torah, but we're growing in becoming worthy recipients to receive the Torah. And that is the process that we're celebrating at the end of it all. Hopefully we get somewhere. So first of all, there's so many different things in different parts of his commentary that he talks about. So let me go, I'm going to jump around a little bit today. So in Devarim, in Parshas Re'eh, there's a few psukim there about Shavuos. And there in Perek Tezayin, there's a few psukim that says as follows. Shiva Shavuos tisbar lach, 7 weeks you should count, mehochel chermesh bakama, from the time that the sickle begins to be put to the grain, when you start harvesting, the first moment, and that's barley is the very beginning, is the earliest harvest. From that moment, tochel dispar shiva shavuos, you should begin to count 7 weeks. So last year we mentioned this, and I'm going to review it again because it ties directly into what it is that we're working towards. What are we growing in during these 7 weeks? It's not a coincidence. It didn't just happen to work out this way that it's the second day of Pesach that all this counting begins. Historically, right, we leave Mitzrayim on the 15th of Nisan. This mitzvah the Torah talks about of Korban HaOmer and the counting, it was really a mitzvah relevant to being in Eretz Yisrael. When you have land, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to have possession of a land and you're going to be farmers. And when you start to harvest, when you start to feel your wealth and all the benefits of having your own independent country, then you have this mitzvah. So the way Hirsch puts it, and all over the place, Yitzias Mitzrayim gave us political, national independence. And for many other nationalities, that's the end goal of having a nation, is to have your freedom and your wealth. It's all about the economy. And you vote in your president because the economy is strong, and that's what the nation rallies around. That's every other country, every other nation in the world. What Hashem is telling us is that's true. You have to. We left Mitzrayim and we gained our national freedom. But already, once you celebrate that, you absorb that. When you finally get to Eretz Yisrael, it's one thing the first year you're getting towards Har Sinai, but for every year after that, you're sitting in Eretz Yisrael and you're a farmer and you're thinking about your wealth. It's the first day of Pesach. Look how rich I am. Baruch Hashem, I got my national freedom. Thank you, Hashem, for taking me out of Mitzrayim and making me a rich farmer. Look at my field. He looks in his backyard and he's got all these things growing. And then immediately comes the Musa lesson of Sfiras HaOmer to tell us that where all other nations reach their peak, this is where we, as a Jewish nation, begin our growth. That it's not about the money, for the money's sake, but the goal is to understand why you have all that wealth. So day number one, after you've absorbed the national independence, is to now have a representative in the Beis HaMikdash to take the very first harvest, the very first thing that blossomed of that was eatable, which was the barley grain, and present that to Hashem. To say, we recognize that our wealth is to be used, to be elevated for some higher purpose. That's literally the next day in the cycle of events, once we have our wealth. To say that it's not about our political and our economic freedom and our economic success. So let me read to you what he says about this at great length in Parshas Re'eh. Yitzias Mitzrayim gave us personal freedom, and it culminated in our being granted national independence through possession of the land. We are to consider both these factors as we count 7 weeks in order to become worthy to begin receiving the Torah. Personal freedom means nothing without Torah. Without Torah, personal freedom turns into anarchy. True freedom can exist only where there is Torah. Israel in particular received freedom only for the sake of assuming the yoke of Torah. Israel's sole purpose is to become the people of the Torah. A person who attains freedom must make a great effort and show himself to be a man in order to overcome himself. He must break the fetters of lust and passion, break the defiance of obstinacy and willfulness, which would make him a slave of sensuality and insubordination. It's easy to receive personal freedom as a gift of grace from the hands of God. But if we wish to set ourselves free inwardly, if we seek to attain the freedom required for our calling as bearers of the Torah, then we must aspire to inner progress that recurs 7 times. 7, he understands, is over and over again. It's a complete cycle. Shiva Shavuos Tisbar Lecha. So the 7 weeks is the over and over again repeated continuous work of our own work, In other words, Yitzias Mitzrayim, that's God's gift to us. But what we do with that, that's the challenge of Sfiras HaOmer, our own inner growth. Material prosperity cannot last without the spiritual enlightenment and moral refinement that put the material assets of this prosperity exclusively in the service of what is morally lofty, good, and true. You know, it's nice to have money, but if you don't do the right things with the money, it's not very impressive. It's not very... very lofty. Material prosperity is of no value without the Torah and mitzvahs. And this is true especially in the case of the Jewish people, Israel. Israel cannot possess God's land without God's Torah. For the land was given to Israel thanks only to the covenant established with their forefather, with Avram Avinu, a covenant that is none other than Bris HaTorah. That's the reason why we got Eretz Yisrael. The land and the prosperity granted, guaranteed by it, must be subordinate to this covenant, as the means are subordinate to the ends. To have the land without the Torah, that would be the surest way to Israel's downfall. And it was. And that's why we were removed from the land. That's why we went into Golus, because we misused the blessings. Israel would be lost and would be erased from the divine record of the history of nations if, like other nations, it were to regard a land of its own and the prosperity to be gained from that land as the one supreme goal, compared to which spiritual and moral concerns have no intrinsic value, but serve only as a means to an end. Israel would be denying its true mission among the nations if it were not to begin to count where others stop counting. Exactly like we said. Other nations stop counting when they have their economy humming. That's their goal. And when Israel's economy is humming, that's when the challenge begins. What do you do with your wealth? Are you a holy nation? Because otherwise, you miss the point. The ikkar has to become the ikkar, and the secondary has to become secondary to the ikkar. The wealth is only a means to a higher purpose. To reach the heights of this conception, which contrasts so sharply with the point of view of other nations, what is required is sevenfold work on oneself. In this conception, only right and morality have intrinsic value. Right and morality are not valued because they can yield and ensure material prosperity. Maybe that's how you think in this country. Everyone votes in the guy who found a way to get the stock market to climb. But that's not really what a Jew looks at his country about. Rather, material prosperity has meaning only insofar as it helps attain and maintain right and morality, humanity in the truest sense of the word. Therefore, Mehechel Charmesh Bakama, the Torah says, from the time when your sickle first cuts the grain, when you're starting to feel you got money, Hashem has blessed the nation with its rich fields, Tochel Ispar Shiva Shavuos, then begin to count 7 weeks. Then begin your moral growth. In short, he summarizes, when you have already attained freedom and have also possessed the land, which provides a physical guarantee for your freedom, do not think that you have thereby reached your goal. Rather, know that you are still at the beginning of your task. Begin the sevenfold work of self-refinement. Qualify yourself to receive, in addition to the freedom and possession of the land, God's Torah from God's hand. Learn to use freedom and the possession only in the service of the Torah and for its fulfillment. Only in this way will freedom and possession have real value. I think that alone is just worthy of being its own independent shiur. I just want to remind you of some things that we talked about last year, which are very tied into this. And that is that in Parshas Emor, the Torah doesn't talk about the counting as weeks, as Shavuos, but rather Shabbosos. There, the Pasuk reads as follows. It's in Emor, Vayikra, Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Tesvav. It says as follows. Usvartem lochem, you should count for yourselves, mimacharas ha-Shabbos, on the day after Shabbos, which means here, the day that you were told you can't have chadash. That's the Shabbos means you had to hold back from eating the grain, which is until the first day of Pesach. Miyom aviyech habiyachem es omer tnufa, from the day that you bring the carbon omer, which is when you're now allowed to eat this grain. So in other words, starting from after the first day of Pesach, Sheva Shabbosos Timimos Tihyena. They shall be 7 complete Shabboses. And there, to remind you of last year's Torah, now we're talking about more than just counting 7 weeks. Now we're stressing the notion of Shabbos. As a prerequisite to receive the Torah, Hirsch points out there in Parshas Emor that, as we know, Rabbi Langer even spoke about it this week. He just happened, I walked in there, he was giving a Hilcha Shabbos here, and he was mentioning this from the Chayadam and somewhere else too, that we all know that every day of the week is counted around Shabbos. We can make Avdolah. If you forgot to make Avdolah, so Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, you can still make Avdolah because they're still relevant. They're the after the effect that Shabbos had on the week. And Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're counting towards Shabbos. We're looking towards it. But everything is orbiting around the Shabbos influence. That's how a Jew is a Shana Shabbos. We often look at a Jew who's a believing Jew as a one who keeps Shabbos, because that's one of the core things. We mentioned this many times. We had a series of shiurim about this last year, right after I talked about Tzvias Omer, about how Shabbos was the first thing that Hashem wanted to bring back to the world once he established the Jewish people, the other side of the Yam Suf. The very first thing that happened when we started having the man was Hashem taught us that there's going to be double man, because part of the message that the Jews had to bring to the world was the Shabbos idea, that to trust in Hashem, that there's an invisible God behind what's visible in the world. Shabbos is a critical theme in how we go about our life. It's very tied into what we do with the physical. It's not just to elevate the physical, but to understand why there is a physical. There's a higher purpose. There's a God who's hiding behind the scenes, who made it all. So the counting isn't just refine yourself, but refine yourself towards a higher Shabbos concept. And then he added another thing. The next pasuk reads, Ad mi machras ha-Shabbos ha-Shviyas tisbru chamishim yom. So the day after, counting all these 7 weeks, you should be counting up to 50 days. And now there's a counting of days. So there's a counting of Shabbosos and weeks, which mentioned there in Parshas Re'eh and Devarim. And now we're talking about days, which is what we know. We count days, we count weeks. But what is the counting of days? So this is, and what does it mean that you get to 50? So there, he in Parshas Zemar, he mentioned, and again, we said this last year, there's a rising past the physical into something more more holy. And it's really, he says, it's breaking away from Tumah and the addictions, the emotional addictions that Tumah represents. And we have this by Bris Milah, where there's a cycle of seven days, and on the eighth day, there's Bris Milah. It's raising a human into some higher sphere. He says that with all of the countings of Tumah, Tumah Snida, Tumah Zav, the seven, and then you go beyond that into the next realm. It's like a new, you've elevated yourself past the seven into the next realm. He says that it's also true, he says this in a few essays, of the musical, the octaves. There's seven, and you go back to the same note on the next octave up, the next level up. You start with a C, and you go all the way up, and you find yourself back at a C, but it's another kind of C. So the cycle of eight raises you up to the next realm. And that's up and out of he calls it the addiction, the sensual, physical addiction to this world, to rise up to something higher. So both things are happening, he says, in the counting of Sphira. There's the Shabbos notion that permeates over and over again. And then there's this constant work that we're doing towards the holier, better side of ourselves. Right, we're leaving Mitzrayim, but we're going towards something holier and higher. So just to recap what we just said, the holiday of Shavuos turns out to be, comes out from the Gemara, explicit Gemara, is not celebrating the day we got the Torah. Rather, it's celebrating the work we do towards getting the Torah. And what is that work? So that we just explained. It's the work of both the notion of Shabbos, of recognizing that there's a higher being in our existence, and over again, reviewing this seven times. And it's also the personal growth, step by step, to go towards being purer, not being addicted to the physical world that we're in. It's one thing, it's true, Hashem gave us our independence, and he gave us a wealthy land. But it's our job now to do the work of not becoming sucked into it, so that becomes our priority, but rather that becomes a tool to elevate ourselves. So in another place, he has an essay in Collected Writings where he then asks the question, if all of this is about living in the land, well, then why do we have Sfiras HaOmer nowadays? He's talking, he wrote this essay in 1855 when we didn't have a state of Israel. What he would say today is a great debate among followers of Hirsch. I'm not getting into that. Nah, I really don't know. But he asks, and during our Golos, why did our Chachamim, other than Shitas HaRambam, all the other Rishonim, Tosfos is the primary one that's quoted, hold that Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is Midrabanan? He says, why did they do this to us? We don't have a land. So why is there a Sfiras HaOmer? And then he goes on to a very long poetic essay where he basically says, really? We don't have the same Yetzer Haras as we had then? We sure do. We have failed miserably at it. And he looks at his own generation, which is the generation Hirsch was born in 1808. When he was born, the Jews in his country, and certainly his city, had basically turned their backs on their tradition, so much so that they went to the authorities, those who had the earliest reformers of the reform movement were there in Germany, particularly in Frankfurt and a few other big cities. They had the mikvahs filled with dirt and stuffed up so there couldn't be mikvahs anymore. They had all the chadarim shut, so it was against the law to have a cheder. And then they had their own version of what was going to be taught. And he said, listen to what happened. Think about it. What happened here? The ghetto walls were taken down because men were being kind and nice to us. Thank you very much. You gave us opportunity, equal opportunity, because all men are free. That was the French Revolution and all the things that came after that. And what did we Jews do with those opportunities? So we decided to give away 25%, 50% of what we believed in for the hope that maybe they would let us into their circles to get degrees and to have wealth and to make it in the world finally. We're ready to give it all away. He said, we have plenty to learn still from Sfiras Omer. It's really sad. But the way he says it, he goes on and on for pages about the tragedy. And then he says, he turns to the nations of the world, particularly in Germany, where he personally was involved in legislation. And remember, he wrote this in 1855, this essay. And he says to them, think about what you're doing. You're busy determining right now. It's up in your Congress. You're deciding whether Jews should get exactly equal rights or not. You're busy thinking about it. You're not sure. Well, let me tell you something. You're terribly shaken and horrified by the tragedies that happened, especially during these months of the year in ancient times, hundreds of years ago. He's referring to the Crusades, where marauding children, sometimes adults, came for the sake of their religion and wiped out entire cities in Germany, wiped them out, murdered them in cold blood for the sake of religion. And you would be horrified with all your beautiful new sensitivities and humanism and what our ancestors did to the Jews. Then he says, but tell me, don't you think that there were also sensitive people in those days who would never have done a thing like that, and it probably curdled their blood when those things happened too. But you know what they did tolerate? They tolerated some of the Jewish rights being taken away. They tolerated, perhaps, that the Jews would be taxed more than other people, that the Jews wouldn't be allowed to own land, perhaps only rented at high costs. That they tolerated. So do you think that it's possible to have some people equal on some things but not equal on others, and that it's not going to eventually, by other segments of society, going to become dehumanizing, where all kinds of horrible things could happen? So today, now you're deliberating in the Congress whether Jews should have the same equal rights as others. Be aware that you're laying the seed for all horrible things that could happen in this country. He said that in 1855. Little did he know what was going to happen, you know, in another 75 years. Unbelievable. But if that was prophetic or what, and, you know, maybe we should think about that too for ourselves, though. I mean, this is really a tangent. It's really not about the subject of Sfiras Omer. But, you know, there's a lot of discussion politically these days about equal rights, about this segment or that segment, immigration and Black Lives Matter. Whether we agree to the statements and the way it's being promoted, I get it. Everyone's got their tinas, their problems with how it's being promoted. But at the bottom of it all, I believe there's some very important lessons here. When people aren't really treated right, then terrible things could happen. That should be a lesson that we should know for ourselves. They initially, in Mitzrayim, didn't want to give us equal rights, right? Initially, they wanted to say, you have to work harder for the country since you were just barely immigrants. We tolerated you. And eventually became slavery and horrible things that were done to us. So that's just a general look. But let's not forget the main point. That wasn't the main point. I just felt I needed to get that off my chest since it was in this essay. But I'm not telling you to go out and demonstrate for any particular group. But it's sometimes we religious Jews don't pay enough attention to the notion of equality and the dignity of all humans. So I thought I'd throw that in.